All right, so let's come back to erase this. Okay, so let's come back to our discussion on memory management. And maybe I will not cover the whole class. I won't spend a few minutes talking about the next project, and tomorrow's discussion will actually have a lot more detail. Okay, but I just wanted to spend 5 minutes talking what it is and so on. Alright. So last time we were talking about segmentation. So if you remember, it's basically a user or compiler's view of a program. So each program or a process actually contains multiple segments. A code segment that contains the code for the program, a data segment that has global variables, a stack segment and a heap segment and so on. And the question was, how do you allocate memory to each segment? Okay, the simplest thing is to have each segment stored contiguously in memory. Okay? But this has the problem of fragmentation. So we said then, why don't we combine paging with segmentation, where each segment is chopped up into pages. Pages are assigned to frames. So each segment has a page table, and you have a segment table to keep track of the page tables. Okay, so there are two levels of translation. Okay, so this basically allows you to combine the best features of paging and segmentation. So what we are going to do now is to further expand on this concept. So we'll assume that you have segmented paging. Okay, and then we'll try to add new optimizations to it. Okay, so one optimization we are going to add is to remove the requirement that the process should be all loaded in memory before it can start executing. Okay? So we'll allow processes to begin executing even before the whole program is loaded in memory. And number two, we will do away with the restriction that the process has to be all resident in memory at all times. So process sizes can actually exceed the size of RAM. Okay? You can start a process if you have 2 gigabytes of memory, for example. You can start a process that's 4 gigabytes in size and still execute it. Question is, how do you go about doing all this? Okay, so for this we'll talk about a new concept called demand paged virtual memory. Okay, so until now, we have, as I mentioned, we assume that the virtual space of a process fits in memory. Okay, so now if you don't want the whole process to fit in memory, or you want the process to be bigger than the size of RAM, or you want only a part of the process to be loaded while it's executing, then you have to find something else to store the remainder. Okay, so suppose, let's take the example where you have a process that's 4 gig in size, your machine has 2 gigabytes of memory. Okay? And if you want this process to execute, then the question is, where do you store the remainder of the process? Okay, is this clear what the question is or what the problem is? So if you allow processes to be larger than size of RAM, or you only allow parts of a process to be loaded in RAM and the rest of it is not in RAM, then you have to ask the question, where is the rest of the process stored while parts of it are in RAM? Okay, so what we are going to do is actually use the hard disk on your machine as a backup to RAM. Okay, so the way we will allow process sizes to exceed RAM, or only partial processes to be loaded, is to actually store the whole process on disk and only keep parts of it in RAM. Okay, you only bring parts of it that are needed in RAM and just execute them, and the rest of it will just stay on disk. Okay. This is also referred to as virtual memory. Okay. Disk is acting like memory. Okay. But it's not really memory. It's basically logical, not logical, but in this case it's called virtual memory. Okay. That's why whenever you hear the concept virtual memory, you have to assume that is effectively a part of disk that is holding memory pages that are not currently resident in RAM. Okay. So that's an important concept to keep in mind. So you are treating disk, or for that matter any other backing store, but disks are the most common, as a larger but much more slower main memory. Okay? This allows us to essentially emulate infinite RAM on your machine. Okay? So now you are no longer constrained by the size of RAM. You can assume that RAM is infinite. You can start any number of processes you want. If you take a typical machine, you would have 100 processes running. Okay? And they are large sizes. Is the total size of these processes typically is many times greater than the size of RAM. The reason you can do this is because you are having disk act as a backup. Whatever you cannot hold in memory, you are storing on disk. And there is, disks are very large. You can have a 300 gigabyte disk drive on your machine, and you might have 2 GB of RAM. So you have a lot more disk space than RAM, so you can have disk act as a backup to RAM. Okay? Just to show you, you can actually look at process sizes. on typical machine. So let's just take this machine and I'll show you. Okay, so here is it's not showing you what is resident. Okay, so here is that Safari. Okay, so here is virtual memory and that's resident size. So you'll see that my browser is actually a process at 1.3 gigabytes in size. Okay, my machine actually is 2 giga of RAM. But what is resident and memory is only about 293 megabytes. Okay, so the remainder of it is actually sitting on disk. Okay, and only part of it is in RAM. And you will see that here is PowerPoint that we are running. That's 1.12 gigabytes in size. So if you add all of this, you will see that I have processes that are about 10-20 gigabytes of processes running right now. Okay? But I only have 2 GB of RAM. So if you add all of these pages, which is resident size, I don't have more than 2 gig of actual pages resident in memory for all of these processes. Yet I can run all of these processes. Okay? So what virtual memory has allowed you to do is eliminate the artificial restriction that RAM puts on your machine. The number of concurrent processes as well as the size of processes both can exceed the size of RAM. Okay? Because you are using disk as a backing store. Okay, is this clear? Okay. Okay. So as I said, the illusion of infinite virtual memory allows process to be larger than the RAM, allows the process to execute even if not all of the process is in RAM. We just saw that only 300 megabytes of this browser was actually in RAM and yet the browser was running, and same was, and you can have more processes than you have RAM for. So you can do all of these nice things. Okay, as a result, you don't have to obey any artificial restrictions. Question is, how do you go about doing this? Okay. So now what demand? So virtual memory requires a technique called demand paging. Okay. Demand paging basically brings pages from disk into RAM on demand or as needed. Okay. We'll assume that whenever you start a process, all of its pages are actually on disk. Okay. You only bring what is needed into memory and only keep that in memory. You don't bring more than what you need. Okay. This technique is referred to as demand paging. You page in stuff on demand. Okay. So now what has happened is memory has effectively become a cache, okay, for all of the pages that you have active in your system. All of the pages are resident on disk. In a partition called a swap space, which we will talk about shortly. And memory is acting as a cache which has only the most recently accessed pages of processes are actually resident in RAM. Okay. So it is analogous to having a cache for all of your pages. Okay, that is stored in main memory. Okay. Now, how to implement this, you need to make some extensions to this page table which talked about last time. In particular, the page table now has to track all of the pages that your process has. Okay? And it has to keep track of which pages are in memory and which pages are in disk. Okay? If you remember the page table, what it effectively was it was a table. For every page number, it basically stored a frame number that said, where is this page frame in RAM. Okay? Now, some pages are going to be in RAM and some pages are going to be on disk. So it has to have pointers going both to disk as well as RAM saying this page is currently loaded in RAM and it's in this frame. This page is still sitting on my disk. Okay? So you have to extend the notion of the page table to track which pages are resident in RAM, which ones are not resident, and if the page is on disk, where is it on disk? Okay? So this is basically the extension that we make into the to the page table. And once you fetch a page from disk to memory, you have to update this mapping. This mapping is no longer going to be static. Pages are going to be brought in from disk into RAM, and pages are going to be evicted from RAM back to disk. And as this happens, the page table keeps getting modified. Okay? So suppose you access this page, and it's currently on disk, you'll have to first fetch it and put it in RAM. Okay? So once it has been brought into RAM, then you have to update this pointer, which will no longer go to that page, but it will go here. Okay? And then if you edit some other page in order to make room for it, then you have to actually update that page table to say, now this page has been evicted from memory, it has gone back to disk, and you put a pointer to the disk. Okay? So you have to maintain this mapping, and the page table to page mapping changes dynamically, depending on what pages are being fetched and what pages are being evicted. Okay? Now, why does this all work? this meaning, why if you actually store a lot of pages on disk and only a small subset of it in RAM, why do your process continue to run without seeing a big performance penalty? Okay. So, to ensure that you have your program runs efficiently, your program must access pages that are mostly in RAM most of the time. Okay. If your program starts accessing pages that are mostly on disk, your performance of that application is just going to be very bad. Okay. The reason for this is what? If you access pages that are mostly on disk as opposed to mostly in RAM, then the performance is going to be bad. Why? Yes. Either one.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, disk is orders of magnitude slower. Yes.
Why when you're, say, loading a very intensive process, that it kind of requires a little ramp up time before it starts, executing, efficiently?
Yes. Lagging? So, when you start up a process, it will start up with no pages in memory. Okay? As it starts accessing pages, you start fetching pages from disk into memory on demand. This is why you see this startup latency for a process, because before it really starts running, a few pages have to come into memory. These pages are referred to as the working set. Okay, this is the definite concept I'm going to define. These are the pages that you have to have in memory for the process to actually run. Otherwise, it's going to be really, really slow, that each page has to be fetched from memory. We'll look at numbers to see how slow it can be. Okay. So disk is orders of magnitude slower than memory. If your program keeps accessing pages on disk, which incidentally is referred to as a page fault, then you have to bring that page into memory, and that is a very slow operation. Okay, so each memory access is going to take equivalent to disk access. Because you access memory, that page isn't in RAM, so you go to disk, you fetch that from disk. So one memory access translates to one disk access. That is going to really cause big performance problem. Okay. Now the reason this you don't typically see this performance problem is that vast majority of your memory accesses happen to pages that are resident in memory. Okay. The question is, why is that the case? And this is because there is this notion of a working set size and this notion of a 90-10 rule. Okay. The working set are the size, working set of a process are the pages that it is currently working on. Okay, meaning those are the pages that the current set of instructions are accessing. Okay. So if you ensure that the working set is actually resident in RAM, then all of those pages are already in RAM, so all of the instructions are accessing those pages, so then you don't really see any slowdown. Okay. And working set slowly changes over time. Yeah. So let's say you have a for loop. I wrote this for loop, well, I erased that rule. So if you have a for loop, then within that loop you are accessing, let's say, an array. Okay. So currently then the working set of that program is that array and the code containing the for loop. If these two things are in memory, then the program is going to continue to execute without any slowdown. Then at some point it's going to exit from this for loop, it's going to go into the next piece of code, and then maybe that's not resident in memory, and then you bring that part in memory. And then again the working set is back in memory and it continues to execute and so on. Okay? So if you basically, since programs have this behavior, we are exploiting this to ensure that although most of your pages are resident in disk, the majority of the pages are actually on disk, the application sees very little slowdown. The impact of this on the application is small. And that also sort of refers to what's called the 90-10 rule, which is 90% of the time the program is actually accessing 10% of its pages. Okay? So it is sufficient to keep that 10% in memory to ensure that there are no page faults. Yeah, the remainder 90% can be actually on disk and there is no performance impact of this. Okay? This is an important concept to keep in mind. This is why demand page virtual memory works without causing significant performance problems. Okay? So here is this new, this is the same picture I drew on the board there. Okay? This is the logical view of the process, which is just a collection of pages. Okay? This is the page table, and now these pages could be either in memory or disk. So you are now the page table has to say, so it says that this page is actually on disk, these two pages are mapped to frames in memory and so on. So you have this extension to the page table that not only tracks frame numbers, page number to frame number mappings, but also tracks which pages are resident in RAM and which ones are on disk. Okay. Okay. So there was this question of when to load pages, right? So now you have this picture where not all of the process is going to reside in memory. Okay? Only subsets of the processes are going to reside. So then you have to ask the questions of when do you bring pages, which pages do you bring, and when do you bring them into RAM. Okay? So the first option is you basically do this as process startup time. When the process starts up, you bring all of its pages into memory. Okay? So this basically requires that the whole process be resident in RAM at all times, okay? Which is not something we want. Because then you have limited the number of processes you can run, or you have limited the size of the process to be smaller than RAM. Okay? So this is the simplest, but thing is something we will not worry about. Okay? So the next technique is something that early operating systems used before you had demand paged virtual memory, and these were called overlays. Okay? If you have actually used early versions of DOS or very early versions of Windows, like Windows 3.1, those did not have demand paged virtual memory. They used a concept called overlays, which was the precursor to demand paged virtual memory. Okay. So let me tell you what overlays are. Okay. So it's very simple. It's actually a simple simplification of demand paged virtual memory. So let's suppose that this is your program. Okay. And program, let's say, for whatever reason, bigger than size of RAM or some such thing. So then this is RAM. So what you do is you actually partition this program into smaller pieces, which we will call overlays. Okay, so let's call this piece A, piece B, piece C. Okay, and this, so when the program starts up, you load the first chunk of the program into memory. Okay, so this piece is now loaded into memory. So A is resident in memory and executing. Okay, and A contains all of the data and all of the instructions that this part of the program needs to access. Okay. So nothing in A actually accesses B or C. Okay. The overlay is constructed so that A is self-contained. Okay. So the program is executing, and then it basically, while it is executing, everything it needs that is contained within part A of the process is already in there. And eventually the execution actually transitions from A to B. Okay. At this point, you basically swap out A onto disk, and then you load B. Okay. So now A is gone back to disk, and B is loaded into memory. So this is called overlaying A with B. This is why it's called overlays. Okay? And again, B contains all of the code and all of the data that the program needs to use. Okay? So now B executes for a while, and then you go back to C and you bring C. Okay? So in other words, you basically chop the program into smaller pieces. Okay? And then you bring one piece at a time, execute it, throw it back to disk, bring another piece, execute, throw it back into disk, and so on. Okay. But these overlays have to be constructed manually, either by the compiler or the programmer. The programmer has to say this piece is self-contained, it's fine to load it into memory, okay, and so on. Demand-paged virtual memory automates this process. The programmer does nothing. Okay. The programmer just writes code. The compiler also does nothing. It writes code. And as the program is executing, the program just makes memory accesses as if the whole process is loaded in memory. If it so happens that you are accessing a page that is not in memory, then the OS is going to fetch it for you on the fly. Okay? So you have completely automated the process, and you have postponed the decision of what to bring into memory at runtime and the page when there is a memory reference. You don't have to do any of this before that. Okay? So we'll come back. Okay? So that's overlays. Okay? Request paging allows the process to tell the OS that it needs a page. Okay. Typically, this is not used by any operating system, because you have to have the process tell the OS every time it's going to access a page what page to bring in. Okay. That's hard to predict ahead of time, so it's a technique that was looked at but not used. Okay. Demand paging is what I basically said. The OS loads the page the first time it is referenced. Okay. Now, demand paging is not just the question of which page to bring into memory. Okay. An important component of demand paging is which pages to throw out of memory. Okay, let me repeat that. It's not just a question of which page to bring in. That is easy. The process just accesses that page, so you have no choice but to fetch it. But the more important decision for the operating system is which page to throw out. Okay, why would you want to throw out pages? Why would you evict a page?
Get it out of memory so you can load others.
Yes. So you have to, basically, a limited RAM. Okay. if you bring in a page, assuming RAM is full, you have to make space for it first. Because it's not like, initially you may not have used all of your RAM, but at some point if you have used all of your RAM, to bring in a page, you have to make space for it by evicting a page. Okay? So the decision of which page to evict is very important. It's critical to the performance or the efficiency of the application, as we will see. Okay? So we'll talk about which pages to evict in, excuse me, in just a moment. Okay? But the process of bringing the page in is called a page fork. Okay? So you access a page, it's not in memory. So this triggers what's called a page fork. This causes a trap to the operating system. Then the operating system goes in and it actually goes, gets the page into memory, it updates the page tables, okay, because it puts a pointer to the new page, and then you go back to the application and re-execute the instruction that caused the page fault. Okay. And then by this time the page is already in memory, so the instruction will execute successfully. Okay. So that's how it goes. So we'll come back to the process of page fault in the next few slides. And then there is this notion of pre-paging. Pre-paging is where the OS or the operating system guesses which page the process is going to access next and prefetches it to RAM. Okay? This allows you to eliminate page fault. Page fault causes the process to stall. Okay? If you hit a page fault and the process is going to stall, it cannot execute until the page is fetched. Okay? If you pre-page pages, if you could guess that the process is executing sequentially, now it is at page I and next it is going to access page I plus 1, even before the instruction actually accesses I plus 1, you could track these accesses and fetch that page into memory. So by the time you actually access I plus 1, that page is already in memory. So there is no stall. Okay, so the process just continues executing at full speed. Now this obviously requires you to guess which pages the process is accessing. If accesses are random, then you cannot really guess. Okay? But in most cases, memory accesses tend not to be random. They show some locality. Okay? So for example, if you have a loop and you are accessing an array in the loop, you might actually index the array by the weight. Like if you have for I something, you may say array of I. Okay, so you are accessing the array sequentially. So if your access is like that, you can actually guess which pages are going to be accessed and bring them into memory. Okay? But if the OS is wrong, then you may actually have done more harm than good. Okay? Because to bring in pre-page pages, you have to evict some other pages. So you brought in a page that was completely useless to the application, and you might have potentially evicted a page that was useful to the application. So if you make wrong guesses, you can actually do more harm than good. Okay? But if you make good guesses, then you improve application performance. Okay. So we'll go back to demand paging. We'll not talk about pre-paging anymore, but just go back to demand paging. Okay. So here is an implementation of demand paging. This just puts together whatever I've been saying so far. Okay. So whenever a process starts up, entire copy of the program and all of its pages are stored on disk. Okay. And you must always have it on disk. You'll see why in just a moment. Okay. And the page table, you add one bit to the page table. Okay. This bit is called the valid bit. It tells you whether the page is in RAM or on disk. If the bit is set to 1, it says that it's in memory. If it's not, it says that it's on disk or this is an invalid page. The page doesn't exist. So now the process starts executing instructions. Okay. And instructions cause the process to access memory location. Let's say you're doing add or subtract or load and store, which require you to go to memory and do something. Okay. So long as you're accessing pages that are in RAM, everything is fine. Okay. Every once in a while, you're going to access a page that is not in RAM. Okay. And at this point, you're going to have the OS fetch it for you on demand. Okay. So if the page is not in memory, this is called a page fault. So then basically what happens is that the process stalls, so you execute an instruction. Okay, so instruction, let's say, is load, and you give a memory address. You say load this into register R1. Okay, so you try to execute this instruction. This memory address requires you to go and index into the page table. Okay? If the page table has a valid bit that is set to 0, then you are going to cause a trap, because this is an invalid instruction. You cannot execute this instruction because the relevant memory is not, relevant page is not in memory. Okay? So this causes a trap which is called a page fault. Okay? So that this instruction doesn't execute. Instead you trap to the OS. Yeah, so the OS then first checks that is a valid address, okay, and then it goes and it first selects which page do I evict. Yeah, because to bring in a page, I said you have to throw out a page. So first to pick which page are you going to evict. And there's a page, this is called this, page replacement, okay, because you're replacing pages. We'll look at how do you pick this in just a moment. For now, let's assume that you just picked the page. Okay, and then so what you do is you put it back on disk. So you invalidate that page. In other words, for that page, you go and change its valid bit from 1 to 0. Flip it because you threw it out. Okay? And then you start loading the new page from disk. Okay? And while this is done, you are going to do a context switch. You are not going to sit there by letting the CPU idle, because it's going to take you tens of milliseconds before this page has even come into memory. Okay? So you will basically, this process has stalled, it's blocked now on a page fault. So you go start executing some other processes. Okay? After some time, the page has actually arrived in memory. Okay? So at this point, you then go and you change the page table. So you get an interrupt that says page is in memory, update the page table entry. So you set the valid bit to 1. Okay? Because it was 0 that caused the page fault. Now you set it to 1, put a pointer to the page frame. Okay? And now you just continue the faulting process. Okay? This is a process that caused the page fault. So you continue executing it. Okay, is this clear before I move on to the next slide? So then what you do in this case is you will go and re-execute this instruction. Okay, this is the one that caused the page fault. Now it goes and re-accesses this memory address. You again go and look at the page table. Now the valid bit is set because the page has arrived in memory. Okay, so you can go and take that memory address and load it into the register, and the instruction actually executes successfully. Okay, is this clear? What has happened? Any questions here? Yes.
What if the process needs more than the amount of memory in order to move forward or break out some sort of deadline?
So what if the process needs more? So if you cannot bring the working set size, then you have this thing, your situation called thrashing. It is something we'll talk about next time. So the working set is precisely the pages that the process needs to be resident in RAM in order for it to make progress. The assumption is that you have to at least allocate that many pages to the process. Okay? Otherwise, it will just keep on page faulting and you are not going to make progress. Okay? So this process is called, if that happens, it's called thrashing, because the process keeps on page faulting and it doesn't make any progress. Okay? And then your performance suffers badly. So that's something you don't want to happen. Okay, so now let's look at this concept of a swap space. So what happens when this page is evicted from memory? What do you do to this page? Okay, the answer is it depends on whether it's a code page or a data page or something. Okay. Put it back on disk, but there is one optimization, of course, you have to do. But the answer really depends on whether it's code or data. Okay. So the claim is if it's a page containing code, okay, you don't really have to put it back on disk. You can just delete the page or overwrite the page in memory. But if it is a page that contains data, okay, or more to the point, the page has actually been modified since you fetched it from disk last, then you have to write it back. Okay, is this clear what I just said or not clear? So I said three things actually. Okay, if you are evicting a page, okay, clearly the page has to go back to disk. But I claim as one optimization, if this page contains code, you don't have to put it back on. You don't have to write it back to disk. Okay, why? Yes. Okay, code is read only. But why do you not have to write it back to disk? Okay, yes, there's already a copy of it on disk. Okay, where is that copy? Wherever you started the program from, right? So you compile your program. Okay, it creates a dot out, or let's say you created this file. So you execute this. So your file system actually has a copy of everything that's in memory. You can just go back to the file system and look for the relevant page in your a dot out, and just bring it back. Okay, is this clear? So the program that you started from, the process of the executable, is already resident on disk. So you don't even need to make a copy of it. You can just use that executable as a backing store for the code segment. Okay? It's read only, it doesn't change. Okay, is this clear? Yes.
And I'm just making sure, like I say, if you have data, but you haven't made any changes to the data, you can just overwrite that. You don't have to write back.
Yes. So that was the second point, that if this is a data page, okay, typically you have to write it back, but as an optimization, you write it back only if you have modified it. Because the previous time you fetched it from disk, there's still a copy on disk. If you haven't modified it, there's no reason to write it back. That copy still exists on disk. Okay? So you only have to write it back if this is a data page that has been modified since you fetched it last. Okay? And for this, there is something called a dirty bit that you store in the page table. The dirty bit says, did you modify it or not? Okay? The dirty bit is said, only then do you have to write it back. Otherwise, you can just overwrite the page. You don't have to bother. Okay? So here is an interesting exercise. Okay, so if you are actually using your file system as a backing store for your RAM, think about what might happen if you compile your assignment. Okay? And let's say you start up the program. Okay? The process is running, and while it is running, you go and delete this file, or you actually recompile it and create a new executable. What do you think will happen? The file system will let you delete files, no problem. You can always delete files, they are yours. Yes. On disk. Yes. No, you don't have it on RAM, that's what I was saying, because it's demand page virtual memory. So you will actually see that you may get a, depending on the operating system, this actually depends on the operating system. Some operating systems are conservative, so when you do this, they make a copy of this in another partition called a swap partition. So in this case, if you modify it, there's no problem. Okay? Some operating systems try to optimize, they're saying, why make this copy? Let us use this copy as a backup for RAM. So what is actually in the RAM are actually pages from A dot out. So if you modify this or delete it, your process will crash next time it page faults. Yes?
So wait a minute. Aren't there certain, if I recall, most Unix file systems, you'll get a new file with an identical file name and path, but the I/O won't actually be deleted until there's nothing
around. Yes, so I was going to come to that in just 1 second. So, okay, so if you actually modify this, you will actually crash. Okay, now there is a safety that was precisely what was pointed out here. The file system actually has a safety switch built in. Okay? And the safety switch is before it deletes files, it actually checks whether there are any existing references to the file. If somebody has this file open for any I/O, it is going to make the file disappear from the file system, but the data blocks are not deleted. Okay? So in other words, the data that you created is still resident on disk, meaning the file system hasn't reclaimed it, but the file may go away, which is okay. So you might actually delete these files, but all of the data is still actually resident on your disk. Okay? This causes the, then what happens is if you can still page in and out. Okay, but this is only an optimization. If some other file come, if you actually go and override those blocks, then your program is going to crash. Okay? So there are some safety switches to prevent the bad case, but it's not always guaranteed it is going to work. This is something to keep in mind. Okay, so as is pointed out here, at any given time, a page of virtual memory could be in the file system. This is if you have code, okay, or processes or exe files, then it actually comes from the file system. It could be in RAM, or it could be in swap space, which is a disk partition, okay, especially created for disk pages. Okay. And the page table needs to know where it is. Is it in RAM, is it on swap, or is it in the file system? So swap space is a special partition on disk that is used precisely to store pages. Okay. Some operating systems make the swap space visible to you and some don't. If you have something like Linux, and the swap space is actually a partition that you can see. okay? But Windows and other operating system just create files that are hidden system files. Okay? It's still on disk, it's just that you cannot see it, so you cannot do any damage to those files. Okay? That's the way most of the swap works. Okay. So I'm going to do performance of demand paging and then maybe spend a little bit of time talking about the project. Okay. So let's now look at when you put it all together, what kind of performance do you see for your application? Okay. So we will assume that typically if you have what are called the processes exhibiting some locality of reference, and there are two types. There's something called temporal locality, something called spatial locality. Okay. So temporal locality says that if a process accesses a page at time t, it is very likely to access the same page at time t plus epsilon. Okay. Meaning that if a process accesses a page now, it is very likely to access the page again in the near future. This is called temporal locality. Okay. Spatial locality says that if I access page I at time t, it is very likely that I could access either page I minus 1 or I plus 1, a neighboring page, in the next time instead. Okay. Typically processes exhibit both spatial as well as temporal locality, meaning pages that are accessed now are likely to be accessed again soon, and if I access a page, I could access neighboring pages again soon. Okay. This is how processes work. Okay. Because of this, we basically get good performance, and here is a simple problem to understand how this might work. Okay. Let's assume that the probability of a page fault, which means that the probability that a process accesses a page not resident in memory, is P. Okay? P could be anywhere from 0 to 1. Okay? Then the effective memory access time for your process is 1 minus P times memory access. This is when you don't have a page fault. Process page is resident in memory. So 1 minus P times the memory access time plus P times the page fault time. Okay? So let's assume that memory access time is 200 nanoseconds. Okay, memory is sort of runs at speeds of nanosecond, and disks runs at speeds of millisecond. Okay, 6 orders of magnitude difference. Okay, disk is 1 million times slower than RAM. Okay, so this is 200 nanoseconds, that 25 milliseconds. So then effective memory access time is 1 minus P times 200 plus P times 25 million. Okay, so if you want no more than a 10% slowdown for your process, okay, because of page faulting, then what should be the probability of the page fault? And the answer, this is how you solve this problem. So if you want 10% slowdown, okay, then effective memory access time is going to be 220. This is memory access time. If you slow it down further by 10%, then effective memory access time becomes 220. Okay. So you plug in 220 on this side of the equation, so 220 is 1 minus P times 200 plus P times 25 million. Okay? So you solve this equation, so you get 200 equals to this, or P is that value. Okay? 8 into 10 to the power minus 6. This is the probability of a page fault. Yes, question.
So if there is a general trend from using languages where there's more stat data than usage of like linked lists and garbage collections,
right,
would that dramatically change the way you approach? Would that remove the locality of reference assumption?
So, yes, question is, if you have other types of applications, would that remove locality of reference? So, you always have some locality of reference. It is just how good or bad is it. Okay? Rarely do you get a process that is just accessing random pages all the time. Okay? There may be some random accesses, but at least the code execution is sequential. So you may get locality of reference in the execution. Okay? If you have go-tos all over your program and all pointers getting accessed all over the place, there may be less locality of reference. Okay? But you will always have some localities, not that you will have no locality whatsoever. It's just that some applications, you've talked about garbage collection. A garbage collector would typically have much less because it is going and trying to reclaim memory space. Okay? So it all depends on what type of application it is. But most empirically, it has been shown that most processes will actually have some. Has it reduced between C and Java? I mean, the applications haven't changed that much. What has happened in Java is that the system does memory management for you by doing things like garbage collection. And that basically allows you to reclaim memory space. And the garbage collector itself might not have much memory locality of reference. Okay. But if you think about any data structures, linked list, Let's take arrays. You probably match to a linked list sequentially. That's locality of reference, because if you are accessing one item here, if you are doubly linked list, you are going to access the next item or the previous item. That's spatial locality. True. Those nodes could be anywhere, but if you have malloc them sequentially or malloc them in some order, there will be some locality because the memory allocator is allocating them from heap. So it's not going to just allocate random pages, it's allocating them sequentially in some sense. So you do get some benefits because of the way memory allocation is. You are right that it could be anywhere, because if you insert some arbitrary element, that will not have locality as compared to next two things in the linked list, but some others may have. It's not guaranteed, it's just an empirical observation. But coming back to this, what this is saying is that every 8 million instructions you can have one page fault. For you to only have 10% slowdown. So this means that you need to have lots and lots of instructions, not have page fault, in order to just tolerate a 10% slowdown. So it basically says page faults have to be very rare in order for you to not impact the application performance at all. Is this clear? So if you go do the math, if memory is actually 1 million times slower than RAM, you can only afford to have page faults every few million instructions, which means that it needs to be really rare. Otherwise, your performance is going to be dramatically impacted. So I'm going to come back to the rest next time. So just before I wrap up, I just want to say something about the next project. So it turns out the next project is about writing a memory allocator. Now you are not going to write a kernel memory allocator, meaning you are not going to do any demand paging or anything like that. Instead, what you are going to do is try to understand how systems manage memory by writing your own memory allocator. This memory allocator will eventually become a drop-in replacement for functions like malloc and new and free and so on. All the things that you actually do. So these are, when you use these functions in your current applications or your current program, these actually make library calls to a library, where the library is a memory allocator. That's actually managing the heap for you. What you are going to do here in this programming assignment is to actually write a memory allocator of your own that will do what some of these libraries do for you. So what does that mean exactly? What do you have to do memory management? Or heap management. So let us look at, so here is OS, here is a process, okay, this is your memory allocator. Okay, so this is basically process is making a stream of calls. It will call malloc and it will do something, then it will have another malloc, you might have free, new and so on. Each of these calls goes to the memory allocator. The memory allocator is managing a set of pages, in this case, on behalf of this process. The first time you may do a malloc call, the memory allocator is going to go to the OS and ask for a new page. So then it will take this page and allocate maybe some part of it back to the application. And if your new another malloc comes and you are asking for a amount of memory smaller than a page, then you allocate another piece here within this page and so on. When you run out of this memory, you ask, and the next malloc comes, you allocate a new page and so on. So what your memory allocator needs to do is that it has to translate these malloc calls into some system calls to the OS, which allocate one page at a time. And you have to keep track of what pages you have currently allocated to this process. So when you call free, you need to go and deallocate this page. You return it back to the operating system. That's basically what you have to do. So to keep track of what pages you have allocated, you have to keep some headers, one for each page. And these headers are not made visible to the process. The headers are actually only visible to your memory allocator. So the memory allocator keeps additional data structures that tracks which pages have been allocated. So when its time comes to free these pages, you go and look at the header, look at the information in there, which will point to this page that you allocated, you go and deallocate that page. So this is essentially what you have to write. And, this is the gist of it. Now there are lots of additional details that Sashi is going to cover in tomorrow's discussion section. Okay? And I'll put up the description on the course web page later this afternoon. So we'll see what you need to do. Okay? So basic idea is to write your own memory manager. Okay? Something that will dynamically allocate memory to a process and deallocate it as the process requests and releases memory. Okay? That's the basic idea. Okay? And the hope is, the reason you are doing this is to get a better understanding of the kinds of things the operating system has to do in order to allocate memory to processes. Operating system also has to do similar stuff. It has to keep track of which pages are available, which pages are free, when to free pages and so on. And this is a small exercise to get you a little better glimpse at how to do memory management. Okay? So this is the basic idea. Okay? Now I am going to make some modifications to all the auto grader number of submissions and so on. So whatever might be in there, I might change a little bit, because if you want more than one submission per day and whatnot, I will go and make those modifications and then put that back into the assignment. Okay, so ignore any auto grader stuff in the assignment right now. Okay, just look at the rest of the assignment and start working on it once we introduce it tomorrow. Okay, and I will make some changes to it based on today's class. Thank you.